someone has talked a lot about the prophecy of the new paradigm that Ra Uruhu put out there. And it's something for me that I think is really freaking irresponsible. As a behavioralist, I think that putting a prophecy out there like that, and it's very scary and doom and gloom, and basically everyone's going to kill each other and all of those things, it's a really, really unresourceful and irresponsible thing to do, because we are, nothing is set in stone. Nothing at all is set in stone. We are going to have these energies, and we're going to choose to do what we will with these energies. What people say when they're sharing this prophecy of Ra, what they don't point out is that even though Ra had the ability, or had these few days where he channeled this information, this profound high consciousness information, he in fact was not a high consciousness human himself. He operated from his shadow most of the time. His primary energy was shock. So he actually was on the planet to birth human design in the best way he knew how, and that was to be shocking. That was to scare the crap out of people so they'd pay attention to it. And it worked.
Welcome to the Enlighten Up Podcast, where I am going to take you into a deep exploration of what it means to exist in this current reality. We are going to raise your vibes, open your mind, expand your heart, and dive deep into the wondrous mysteries and possibilities of this lifetime. There's been a spiritual catalyst that has set in motion the awakening process of many across the globe to return to the knowingness of self and unite what has been separated. Together, we're going to bring light into that darkness. We're going to remember the joy of living. But most of all, we're going to turn up the volume of our own eternal power and do the thing we're here to do.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Enlighten Up Podcast. And today I'm really excited because we're going to talk about something I have yet to discuss on the podcast, and that is human design. And who better than Emma Dunwoodie to share her knowledge and wisdom with us? She is a human design expert, master coach, behavioral specialist, and host of the number one global human design podcast. She wakes people up to the power within using her unique method of transformational human design, a system of self-knowledge and guidance unlike anything else that exists. Her vision is to take human design mainstream so it becomes more widely accepted than any other global profiling, behavioral, or healing system. She believes it will transform personal development, education, and business forever. Emma wants to inspire everyone to unlock their inner wisdom, take their power back, and feel deeply confident in the decisions they make. This will create a population that values themselves and courageously lives their truth, which will deliver us to a new paradigm of peace, joy, and abundance. Emma, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Wow. Thank you so much for having me. And that's a big thing to step into. Like, hearing that sort of read back to me is always like just reminding me on this big epic mission that I'm on. So it's exciting to be here with you.
I know. I feel the exact same way too when I'm on other people's podcasts and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is really cool. I haven't really dived too deep into human design. The little bit that I did know, which I think it was a few years ago, I uncovered that I was a manifester, and that's all I really knew. I've dabbled in the gene keys a little bit. But again, it's nothing I'm really well versed in. So I'm excited to have you here so we can go deeper into all of this. I think, first of all, just let my audience know, for anyone who may not even know, what exactly is human design?
Yeah, so human design is a synthesis of ancient wisdom and modern science, basically. And what it does is it gives you your energetic blueprint. So many of us dive into our personality or behavioral profile. So that might be Enneagram, or that might be Myers-Briggs, or that might be DISC profiling. And because we want to know ourselves better. Well, human design goes even further than that. So instead of your personality or your behavior, it actually talks about your energetic blueprint. So superpowers, how you're designed to make decisions, you know, even purpose, how you're designed to attract abundance, like all of these things sit within human design. And it's a coming together or a synthesis of Western astrology, the Hindu chakra system, the Chinese I Ching, and the Kabbalah tree of life, and integrated with modern sciences like quantum physics, fractals, even having a look at our genetic codes and our genes and how they map back to some of these ancient wisdoms. So yeah, it's so deep and complicated and super juicy. All the things that are in there.
It sounds super deep.
Yeah, it does. It goes super deep.
Yeah, I love how it encompasses so many different things, because all of the things you talked about, I love. I want to ask you, how did you get involved in this? Was it something like, how were you guided towards it? And what really spoke to you about it most?
I love this question, because like so many people, especially in the beginning, I actually came to human design 3 times and resisted it and rejected it. And I was like, nah, like I come from a very science-backed, you know, evidence-based background. At the time, I had a successful corporate coaching business. I was working with C-level executives. I was running workshops, doing a lot of the profiling through behavioral tools. And human design kind of came to me at a time where I'd completely transformed my life. I had healed my mental health. I had transformed all my relationships. I had moved out of the advertising industry and retrained to become a master coach. I built this business. And I found myself at this place where I was like, shouldn't I feel better than this? You know, like, yes, I'm happy now, after having years of being right on the edge of, you know, whether or not I would continue on with this life. So there were so many things that were so much better, but there was still this hole inside of me. There was something missing. And for me, that was all about purpose. And I kind of declared to the universe, well, if you show me, like, you need to be plain as day with me exactly what you want me to do, and I promise I'll just do it. And in that small window of time is when human design came to me, and I just made that promise to do the experiment. I would run the experiment. I would live initially through strategy and authority, and I would see what happens. And basically everything shifted. My entire life shifted. And within a very short period of time, that hole inside of me, that gap, that purpose gap, was filled. And all of a sudden I was experiencing all of this success in my life, not like I thought it would be, in such a better way. And it was because I had just committed to running my human design experiment.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you did come from more of like the traditional path, and then moved more into less traditional, but still not feeling where you thought you were supposed to feel. And human design kind of opened that up for you more, as kind of like brought you more that fulfillment and purpose that drives you up in the morning.
Well, ultimately what it did is it gave me the permission I was looking for to be me. You know, I'd spent a lot of years in the performance realm. So I knew I had completely reconditioned my mind, my brain by that stage, having done depression and panic disorder for many, many, many years. I completely understood the brain and neuroscience and behavior and all of these things. And so my background was very, as I said, science-based. However, once human design came into it, all of a sudden I realized that I wasn't designed to operate like everyone else. And, you know, spoiler alert, none of us are, that was just conditioning. You know, I'm just conditioned that this is what success looks like. And once you create it, you'll feel like this. And like so many people on a similar path to me, is you get there, you climb that mountain, and you're like, shouldn't it feel different? And what human design has really given me is the ultimate permission to be me. And Now I do the work that I absolutely adore, so much so that I find myself at this time of year, like, as I call myself a puddle. I feel like I'm just a puddle in the corner because I'm exhausted because I've had such an incredible year, you know, making all my dreams come true, serving my community, getting the word out there. And in the way that I'm designed, so I call it authentic success. For me, human design has given me the key to my authentic success.
Okay. I love that. I love that. And I think that that's something in our world today that so many people are, without them maybe even realizing it, they're so drawn to that because we're living in a world that is so, well, it's built on a lot of false advertising, so to speak, right? And we're also in a time where there is this big permission slip to be authentic, but at the same time, there's also this huge kind of mob mentality that's surfacing within the consciousness of our collective that is really highlighting how detrimental it can be to someone to really put themselves out authentically. Because in one breath we're saying, yeah, be authentic, but then in another breath it's like, no, but be it this way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the toughest things that we're faced with in this day and age is that, you know, we used to live in a world that was seemingly safe, you know, like, yes, it wasn't safe for everyone, but, you know, I'm speaking from a behavioral point of view. Like, we knew who we were and how to behave and what the world was. And now we live in this time where we know nothing. And all of a sudden, what we were unconscious to, we are conscious to. We know that we know nothing and we know that we have no control over everything. And we're suddenly aware that all of these people that are meant to be taking care of us are lying to us. And they don't have our best interest at heart. And I think one of the most important things about human design, especially from my perspective and the way I teach it and use it in my business, is it empowers us to start to make decisions for ourselves. You know, instead of this mob mentality that you talk about, which is, again, something we're conditioned to do, we're conditioned to separate. And ultimately, we're actually completely unique, each and every one of us, which is the one thing that brings us all together. And when we start to realize that the power lies within us, you know, it's in our hearts, it's in the way that we can be loving and compassionate and supportive, then the whole mob mentality, which is actually a form of control, that falls away. And again, like, human design gives us the way that we can make the best and correct decisions for ourselves, knowing that when we make the best and correct decisions for ourselves, ultimately, it's going to be the best and correct decision for the human race and planet Earth.
Yeah. I love that you said that the one thing that brings us all together is our uniqueness. That's the one thing we all have in common. And it's true. And at the same time, it's trying to be like everyone else that really, truly drives us all apart. And so this is beautiful. Now, I'm curious to know, what was it from your discovery of human design that was like your light bulb moment, like where you looked at it and you're like, well, now I know why this never worked, or now I know why I have to do this. Like, what was your light bulb moment that really kind of spoke?
Oh my God, I love this question. And I feel like, because I'm a manifesting generator, as you are, we just checked your chart, you're also an MG. There's many of them. But the first one that I discovered that set me free was understanding that I'm an MG, that I'm a non-linear being, meaning that I'm going to jump all over the place. So I am on the planet to do the work that lights me up. However, I tried for years to like jam myself into this one road. You know the story, go to school, get good grades, go to university, you know, pick a career and stick to it. And the thought of that was like, it would just make my stomach churn. I just want to vomit at the thought of it.
That makes you just want to run away.
Oh, exactly. I'm like, no, I'll have none of this. And I'm like, I have a line 3 in my profile. So do you. So what that means is that I don't want to live a conventional life. So when I started to understand that this jumping all over the place, like, I mean, I've worked in, I had a very successful advertising career. I've been a chef. I've run an equestrian property. Like, I have done so many different things, and I used to criticize myself for that. And ultimately what happens as an MG is that you go through all of these iterations of yourself. You learn all these things. You do the things that light you up. And then all of a sudden you bring them together. You feel like, oh, this bit goes with that bit. Oh, we don't need that bit over there. So the first thing for me to understand was that I wasn't a quitter. It wasn't that I just couldn't stick to one thing. There wasn't anything wrong with me, that I was actually here to demonstrate human potential. I was here to rewrite the narrative around work. And ultimately, I've always been very, very purpose-driven. However, there's also part of me that's always just wanted to earn really good money being paid to be me so that I can also live this incredible life. Like I can, you know, go and hang out with cultures in far-flung parts of the world, and I can take my kids everywhere, and I can rewrite the rules to almost every part of my life. And when I started to understand that being an MG meant that I had full permission to be messy, to get out there and experiment with life and break things and remake things, and that I didn't have to like make myself smaller anymore, that that's actually my superpower. That was one of the moments that I really got it. I was like, yep, this is absolutely me. It feels so true. And all those books that are sitting on my nightstand that I've never finished, it's okay because I've got what I needed from them. I can just move on.
Oh my God, I'm the same way. Yeah. It's like, I feel like I'm talking to like my soul sister here.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, it's because like, I think that like you, you know, there are so many things that I've done in my life, and I from the jump, and which I know gave my parents so much stress, was like, I just didn't want to do things the way everyone else was doing them. I didn't want to go and do the 9 to 5. I didn't even want to go to university really to like go and finish my degree, which I ended up leaving and going to massage therapy college. But like you, I've now, with hindsight, because hindsight is definitely 2020, I can see how everything that I've done, both what feels related and what feels very unrelated, all comes together and serves a higher purpose. And they were like all necessary puzzle pieces to this grand tapestry of a vision that I think my soul designed for myself before I came in here, you know? And
that's
so,
it.
Yeah. And so, one of the things that I wonder if this is something you're working on too, but I feel very called to really help people get more into their body so they're truly manifesting, like really building and creating what it is that they're seeing in their mind, or that's speaking to them from their heart, and really realizing that it's not just about, you know, the visions that you have in your meditations, and it's not just about the heart-based attraction, but it's about the doing, it's the action, it's being in your body, being in this here now moment. And like, did you have experiences in your life where you realize, or that have been teaching you, how important it is to be in your body for that to happen?
I love this question. And human design, one of the primary principles is that it's about getting us out of our head and into our body, because the whole point is that the best and most correct decisions for us as individuals are made below the neck, okay? They're not made between the ears. So with human design, like, it's one of the primary principles is to get us back into our body so that we can listen to the wisdom. And in human design, we call it our authority, that's literally guiding us in every moment. But if we're not in our bodies, which so many of us aren't, then we can't access that. And I know for me, and it's something I see in so many of my rooms, whether it's my mastermind or my membership community, HDX, this moment, and I had this moment where someone realizes, they're like, oh my God, I think my feelings, I don't feel my feelings. And when they kind of wake up to that moment, you're like, you get it now. So that thing that you've been trying to manifest, the reason why it's not manifesting is because it never got below the neck. Mm. You know, maybe you're trying to manifest something you think you should manifest. Maybe you're just not having enough fun with it. Maybe you're not giving yourself enough space for it to drop into the physical body. Maybe you've got trauma that's blocking the ability to feel. I mean, for me personally, I had completely cut off the feeling in my body. And human design kind of helped me to answer the reasons why, because I've got an undefined spleen, which means I amplify and reflect back other people's fear and pain. So when I broke my arm as a kid, and I broke it in two bones, the bone was sticking out of my arm, I didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel a thing. And for hours it was like that, and I didn't feel anything. And in hindsight, I realized I just cut off from the pain. I couldn't feel, I was so done with feeling other people's and amplifying other people's pain, that I just cut it all off. And when we cut off the hard stuff, we also cut off the joy or the polarity of that. So I think one of the really big things, I mean, human design actually doesn't matter what modality it is. The most important thing that we have to do is get back into our body. And in my experience, it's so much simpler than we think it is. I mean, for years, I was like, how do I get back in my body? How do I get back? How do I, but really give me the step by step. How exactly do I do that? And one of the things that I think is so important is we're doing it all the time. We're just not listening to it. You know, when you pick up a pen and you feel the pen in your fingers, you're in your body. So it's like really practicing all of these tiny moments. And I'm always teaching like practicing the tiny moments that what I call inverted commas don't matter because you don't have an attachment to it. So feel the dog sitting on your lap or the ring on your finger and practice just being in your physical body. And that can really help you get back in there so you can hear the more subtle energies and the wisdom that's actually trying to be heard.
Yeah. And this is so key. And this is something I discovered in my 20s, just from, because I started to realize, oh, wow, I can manifest things really easily and quickly. I kind of just think about it, but because I kind of was knowing how to get into my body really easily through when I would visualize, I wouldn't just visualize, I would feel myself there. So, and this is like, I love creating meditations. I've like created over 50 guided meditations. And when I'm taking people through them, even in like sessions with clients, if we're doing one-to-one work, I will make sure that they're like running their hands over something and touching and really feeling if they're, what's the temperature of the room? Are there any scents that you can smell? Like, and really get them there. Because when you feel it that strongly in your physical body, the mind now truly believes it's there and it's happening. So now it's a truth and now you believe it and now it can come true.
That's exactly right. And it's the gate in the brain that's open. You know, once we get into that place and our brain waves are in the right place as well, like that's when the magic happens. I think with manifesting, one of the things that I really discovered is the harder I tried to manifest, the further away it got.
Yeah.
The more I just did what I did as a teenager and put music in my ears and go for a walk and daydream about the things that I want to experience, poof, they'd show up, you know?
I know. Music is one of the best, like what's the word do I want to use, like just modalities to like utilize, right?
Yeah, because it just opens up your heart, you know, and I mean music and singing, it's just as powerful connecting to source as meditation and those sort of things.
I agree. So okay, so what are the different types for anyone who's maybe new to this? Because I know some of my audience are really into this already, but I know there's going to be people who are new. So what are the different human designs on a basic level first?
Yeah, sure. So when we first learn about our design, we learn about our type. And type has a couple of important things in there that we want to pay attention to. One most important thing is the strategy. The strategy is kind of like how the universe speaks to us, how the universe guides us. And each type has their own strategy. So let's start with manifestors. Manifestors are here to inspire people into action. Now, these are people that have, from an aura perspective, a really big aura. When they walk into the room, you know they've walked into the room. They're also people who can be very, and I don't love this language, but they can be polarizing. They will tend to be people that you either really like or they're kind of not your people. And that's super important because they have to inspire their people into action. So the people who aren't their people, they need to drop away. They need to not, not be wasting their energy with. And one of the really important things with a conditioned manifestor is they will make themselves smaller. They will people please. They will try and be everybody's friend because, that polarity that they have inside of them and that ability to really like almost turn people off, they see as like a bad thing, that there's something wrong with them. And actually it's a beautiful part of who they are because they're very powerful. They're the only ones that can initiate. So their strategy is all about informing and initiating. So they're here on the planet to follow their creative urge, to initiate what they want to initiate and to be so authentically themselves. And then what they'll find is that they just attract all their people to them like a beacon. I know for me, I've got a number of manifestors in my life and I will follow them to the ends of the earth because they are 100% so inspiring to me. Then we have generators, and generators make up 70% of the global population. Manifestors are just under 10%. And generators and manifesting generators, I should say, make up 70%. I'm just going to speak about generators first. So their strategy is to respond. These are the people who feel so easy to be around. When they're lit up by the work they're doing, they're so attractive. Like you can just hang out with them. You love to be in their energy. You know, like sometimes the manifestors and the projectors can feel a little bit uncomfortable, but generators, they will tend to feel pretty comfortable to be with. Now, their purpose, their journey is all about doing what lights them up. These will tend to be the people in their shadow, in their conditioning, that do so much of life through obligation. They do what they think they should do because they can. They've got the energy for it. They may as well do it. No one else does it if they don't. They have all these unresourceful stories, which are just not true. And ultimately, they are here to respond to life. They're here to say, you know, if we're talking about manifesting, let's say you as a generator, you want to manifest a house. So it's like you put the manifestation out there, you feel it in your physical body, and then all of a sudden the universe brings you all of these things to respond to. That might be different houses to look at. That might be pamphlets, that might be ideas. Like the whole time, once this is out there, things are being brought to you to respond to. And what you're listening for is, I got energy for that. I don't have energy for that. It's that simple. And if the generator follows the yes, no, the gut yes, no, then, you know, in response, then beautiful things will happen. You will build this new paradigm.
Okay.
Now, the manifesting generator is a hybrid of the manifestor and the generator. And they are a bit of both. So everything I've said about both of them applies except for the strategy. The strategy of an MG, manifesting generator, is the same as a generator. You must be in response and you must inform like a manifestor. So what does informing mean? It means declaring the direction of your energy. It's not asking permission. It's not, you know, declaring that you're going to do this thing almost despite people. It's just like, oh, I'm thinking about going up the shops to grab this, or I'm going to be working on this for the next 2 hours. So can you give me some space? So it's really important that they both inform. It doesn't feel comfortable at first. However, just practice it, experiment. I trust me, it'll change your life. And MGs are these non-linear beings. They learn faster. They get in, they get out quicker. They go and almost master lots of different things. They break things, then they remake things. They're here to really demonstrate human potential and what we can really do in this new paradigm that we're creating. They also need to be lit up, and they're here to build whatever lights them up. Then we have projectors. Projectors are about 14% of the global population. And the thing with projectors is that they are here to be guides. They are full of wisdom. They will be a master at seeing what's going on in the collective and being like, well, this gap needs filling, or that person's not using their energy in the best way possible. This is a better way to do things. They're really good at creating systems that plug those gaps, if you like. The challenge for a projector is that they are fundamentally here to be seen and acknowledged, and unresourceful, or projectors that are coming from their shadow or their fear, they're constantly trying to get attention, which means that they don't get invitations, which is their strategy. And an invitation is someone saying, wow, I love what you do with that. Can you help me with that thing? Whatever their wisdom is. And some great project, like once a projector is really solid in their own self-worth and their own wisdom and so the value they have to give to the planet, then the invitations just flow. It's not something you have to sit around and wait for. And then we have reflectors, and reflectors are only 1% of the global population. And they're actually, the best way to put them is they're a window or a mirror of society. They are constantly amplifying and reflecting back the energy of the people, the places, and the experiences that they are in. And what they're showing us is they have the ability to see into the future. Like if we continue this behavior, if we continue doing what we're doing, this is what the future is going to look like. However, if you, especially let's say the listeners, a reflector that would hang out with the listeners of your podcast, what they're going to see in the future and what they're going to reflect back is going to be very different to other podcasts or other, you know, people who are maybe a lower frequency or lower consciousness. So it's super important for reflectors to be with people and in environments that feel really great because they're expanding whatever they're reflecting back. And their strategy really is just to take time. It's all about the 28-day moon cycle and just taking their time and really paying attention to sampling the things that are going on in their life, the people, the places, and if what feels good, do more of it. What doesn't feel good, you got to have boundaries and move away from it.
Wow. Wow. And so just so everyone knows, you've got a link to get a free analysis of your own human design chart, which I'm going to leave in the description below. So for those of you who are listening, you can find out, you know, what you are and then re-listen and understand, like, just from what you've said, maybe, and see if that resonates with you and if it helps in to some degree. Now, of course, that's just kind of like on the basic level. There's like subsections to all of this. Okay. You also do something called transformational human design. It's your trademark. So what exactly is that?
Okay. So thank you so much for asking about this. And one of the things for me, because I'm a master coach, like I'm a behavioral specialist, one of the things when I first started using human design, I could see this epic power that this had to really give us permission to lean into our authenticity. But it also had, it was kind of stagnant. Like it was, this is what's within you. There was no growth. There was no journey. And as a behavioralist, I'm like, well, that's not true because we can change our focus. We can change our mindset. We change our identity. Like we can heal our trauma and all of these things. So I wanted to introduce all of the transformational methods that I use along with the gene keys. The gene keys is almost like, I don't even know how to put it to give it. It's incredible. Okay. The Gene Keys is created by a guy called Richard Rudd. Similarly to human design, it was channeled wisdom. Ra Uruhu channeled human design. Richard Rudd channeled the Gene Keys. And the Gene Keys are actually in human design, they represent the 64 gates that we talk about in human design. And in the Gene Keys, there's just this powerful evolution. And he talks about from the shadow to the gift to the Siddhic state. So all of a sudden, I could see that when we take human design and we add the gene keys, then we put transformational coaching over the top, I had movement. I had this potential to really help people transform their entire, like their mind, body, soul, the whole bit. Because ultimately, human design in the original knowledge is like, well, if you just follow your strategy and authority, you should decondition in 7 years. And by that time, you should probably fall into alignment with your design. And me being a manifesting generator, I'm like, stuff that. I'm not waiting 7 years. Like, how do I tweak it? How do I hack it? How do I get there faster? Mm-hmm. So transformational human design was really the answer to that. And it's the way that we use human design and the gene keys to get so specific on what's going on in our unconscious mind, in our physical bodies, how we might respond to trauma, the stories that we're probably going to lean into. Because at the end of the day, when we want to change our behavior, we have to access our unconscious mind in the language that we language these things. What do I mean by that? So a lot of people will go and learn about money, and ultimately whoever's teaching the money will say that you're not enough. And you'll go, yes, I resonate with not being enough with money, or I don't deserve money. But if that's not the language that your inner child uses, then the transformation doesn't happen. Or the transformation takes more time. So we want to get really deep into our own authenticity, our own uniqueness. And human design is the science of individuality. It's the science of uniqueness. And when we do that and we really understand on the depths, and it might be like, oh, wow, it's not a fear of not being enough. It's a fear of failure, or it's not a fear of failure. It's this fear of, you know, of emotional crisis or whatever it might be, you can see how you demonstrate these behaviors when you're coming from fear versus when you're coming from love. And for me, transformational human design is that pathway of transformation. It's very MG. It's the faster path. It's, you know, using a number of different modalities that I've plucked as a line three myself. I've got rid of everything that doesn't work and I just focus on the things that do work. Mm. And as a line five, I'm here to universalize. So ultimately, everything that I've done in my life, I have learned, I've experimented, I've done all of this and all the learning and I've thrown out everything. And now I want to take it to everybody. I want to take it to the entire planet so that everyone else can transform their lives like I have.
Yeah, that sounds very much like me. Like that's like how I feel like I operate too. Like everything that I offer and teach is stuff I've experienced. I've lived yeah. it. I've moved through it, you know, and what worked, I keep. What didn't work, I like threw out and just like, let's go.
Yeah. And you know what? We actually have, like, we're both MGs and we both have a 3-5 profile. So there's a lot of like our overarching parts of our design that are really similar. And the way that we move through life is very similar. So it's going to, you're an experiential learner, you know, you probably love to learn, except when you're in a physical experience of learning, you probably thrive. You're now I get it. Now I have questions. Now I know what I want. And as you go through that experience, the five, especially when it sits in the second number, like you're all about impact. You want to have an impact. You want to lead. You're a powerful energy. And you want to take everything that you have and like give it to the world. Does that resonate?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, that's me to a T, really. So can we go a little bit deeper into this so people can maybe understand, like, you've done my profile and you said I'm an MG, I'm a 3-5 sacral. What does a 3-5 yep. sacral mean?
So our, for you, it's the sacral, it's called our authority. So our authority is all about how we are uniquely designed to make decisions. Mm-hmm. So what that means is as a sacral being, you actually have of all the authorities, it's the simplest and the easiest to have. Now, I say it's the simplest. The biggest challenge with you is the mind, because the mind, and it's the same for everyone, but for you, in every single moment, you're responding to life and your sacral is going, I've got energy for this. And as I'm speaking, you can see your head nodding. It's because your sacral is saying, yep, that's true. Yep. Got energy for that. Yep. Yep. And then when you don't, either shake your head, you say no, you step back. That's the sacral saying, I don't have energy for this. And what you need to really understand is that when you get a no, when you get a I don't have energy for this, it's about putting a boundary in place and saying no. Mm. Because ultimately what your sacral is telling you is that we do not have energy to complete whatever this thing is. So don't freaking do it. This is not in alignment with being lit up. This is not for us. And the sacral has access to, you know, that deepest what is correct and what isn't correct in every moment for you. The biggest challenge with being a sacral is that you've had it all your life. It's always there. It's always happening. But the mind will potentially jump in, especially with the bigger decisions, because it shouldn't be that easy, right? To just say, no, I'm not buying that house. Or yes, I'm just going to spend all that money on that house. However it is, it's that simple for you. So when we understand our authority, that's our internal guidance system. So if our strategy is the universe speaking to us and guiding us, our authority is our internal guidance system, our spirit, our higher self, our connection to source, whatever you want to call it. And the two of them together are this constant communication loop. And they're in communication with a thing that we call the magnetic monopole that sits right in our heart space. From a human design point of view, it sits in the G center. And that is actually, as it sounds, it's a one-ended magnet that just attracts. So when we talk about the law of attraction, that's our magnetic monopole. It's attracting all the things to us. So our strategy and authority and the magnetic monopole are always in conversation together. So there are a number of other authorities. So each of us have different authorities. So for example, I'm an emotional authority, which is different to what you have. So I have the defined sacral. I have the, yes, I have energy for this. No, I don't. But ultimately I have to have emotional clarity before I act on the yes or no. And what that means is that I have to ride out my emotional wave. Like I'm a human that I'm always living in this mechanical wave. And as a behavioralist and for years of studying and working with my mindset and, you know, having done depression and panic disorder for so much of my life, I was constantly, you know, rewiring, reconditioning, doing all the things. And I was like, why does it, is it easy for someone else? And it's not so easy for me. And it's because I have this mechanical wave. I'm always somewhere in my emotional mechanical wave. What I've learned is that I can no longer attribute unresourceful stories to the lows, because someone like you, with that pure sacral and non, and you're a non-emotional being, if you're a pure sacral being, you're a non-emotional being. What that means is that, and it doesn't mean that you don't have emotions.
Yeah.
It just means that you don't experience them like I do. Like, I'm constantly in this wave. It's like up and down and roundabout. Whereas for you, it's like, yeah, obviously. Oh no, obviously. Yeah. And it's really funny. Like, when you look at the non-emotionals versus the emotionals, you know, it's nearly 50-50 in the global, on planet Earth. It's crazy how different we are. Like, so my COO of my business, she's a sacral MG like you, and she just makes decisions like that, you know? And she said before we started working together and she really started to understand her human design, she's like, God, I just thought you guys were annoying. I just thought it was just that you were indecisive and you couldn't make up your mind. I'm like, oh no, it's not like that. It's like, I have to wait for this emotional clarity. And it can be just as frustrating for me because I see you with all this beautiful clarity, but I have to wait, you know? So our authority is this way that it guides us to where we need to be. There's splenic authority. Then we have like ego, self-directed and mental, and then there's no or lunar authority as well. So there's a few of them.
Mm. So as a sacral being, does that mean like, intuition is a really good power tool to use in my decision making? Like, just because to me, when I hear sacral, obviously I think of the sacrum, like the sacral chakra, and that's all about our feelings. It's our gut. It's the gateway into, well, it's so interesting because even like a lot I talk about is helping people get into their sacral chakra, and how to manifest, but also how to use it as the gateway to getting all the answers that you need. So this is like really cool to be hearing this, because.
So sorry, can I jump in?
Yeah, please do.
Because that is absolutely your authority. That's the way you're designed. Your gut is telling you everything in every moment that this is the way to go. That gut response is so important. You also have a defined spleen, which is all about intuition and instinct. So you also have that as well. That's really consistent and reliable. We all have it, whether we're defined or undefined. It's just we're going to experience it in different ways. So for you specifically in your design, because all your definition happens below the throat, you do have this really consistent and reliable energy that you can like anchor into in your body. And the sacral, that is like the final say. So it's no surprise that you're like, you're all over it. And it's about life force energy. It's about the work that lights you up. It's about that sexual, sensual energy. And also all sacral beings, they're creating the life force energy for planet Earth. So how lit up you feel, how good you feel in your own body, how much life force energy you're exuding is actually not just serving you. It's serving the entire planet.
That's so cool. Okay. Now you said something else that was really interesting that I've never heard before when I've looked into like human design. You said I had a sphinx, a cross of the sphinx. Is that what it
is?
Okay. Yeah. What is that? Cause like, as soon as you said sphinx, I was like, oh, all the like dingers went off, you know? And I'm like, tell me more. Okay. So what is this layer? First of all, just what is this layer for everyone to understand in their own design? And then can you go into the cross of the sphinx?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is our incarnation cross. So our incarnation cross is made up of the four like most prominent energies in our design, which is our personality, sun and earth, and our design, sun and earth. They're four different gates. And those four gates make up one of the many incarnation crosses.
How many incarnation crosses are there?
In total, I think there's 270 something.
Oh. Okay.
There's quite a number. There's some that are very common. The right angle ones are pretty common, but the left angle ones not so common. And yours specifically, well, before I go there, Ra Uruhu, who is the incredible human that channeled human design in, he talked about the incarnation cross. It's the job description of our aura. And one of the things you need to be very aware of is there's nothing to be done. The job that we do to do the work of our incarnation cross in the world is just to clean up our shadow, clean up our fears, clean up our, heal our trauma, heal our inner child, do those things, raise our consciousness. And then our incarnation cross is just, it's as the consciousness grows, it's just doing more and more higher consciousness work. But we don't necessarily have to do anything. Although a lot of people who have what we call high workload crosses, which I'm just quickly looking at your, which you have, they're going to be very aware of that it's going to be really tied into the work that they do every day, because every single human that comes into aura with them is being affected by their incarnation cross. I'm the same. I have a high workload cross. And what this actually means is I love to use the metaphor of your incarnation cross is something that your aura is doing all the time. So if you sit down on a train or a bus and you just have a random conversation with a person next to you, or you drop something and they pick it up, or they don't even communicate with you, they just see the title of the book you're reading or something like that, that's your cross working. It's just doing its work. It's helping people get the energy they need to move somewhere or do something or make a change. Like one of the cool things that we do in my community is each incarnation cross has what a friend of mine, Brynja Magnusson, who's written this great book on incarnation crosses, she has a dinner party question for each incarnation cross. And what we do at retreats or in my mastermind or my community, my membership community, we will literally pick people's names out of a hat and then we ask them their incarnation cross question. And every time you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you got that question. You know, it's crazy. Because ultimately, every time we call in a person or their cross, it's because we need that energy. So for me, for example, we did this on retreat in Mexico this year, and one of the girls pulled my name. And the question for my cross is, what does your community need? And what's really fascinating is that this woman, her entire business is about building communities. So it was like, stop it. And it just would keep happening over and over and over again. So your incarnation cross is the cross of the Sphinx. And all four gates sit in what we call the G center. The G center is about the higher self. It's about unconditional love. And it's about direction. So the Sphinx is actually made up of the four gates of direction. And what that is all about is that you are actually someone who people will call you in when they're ready to take a new direction. Often they feel lost. Often they're at the point where they've thrown their hands up in the air and they're like, I just have no idea. And you just appear. And then all of a sudden, this energy of directional leadership just appears in their life. And then this powerful leader directs them into this new direction. And ultimately, it's this really, really, really powerful leadership energy. Now for you, because it's a very prominent energy for you, one of the things that's really common with people who have the Sphinx is that they're going to be people who get, there's going to be very, you know, marked times in your life where you're lost, where you feel desperate because you're lost, depressed, like in the lowest low, like I just don't know where to go and what to do. And this is a keynote of the Sphinx, because what's actually happening is something's birthing inside of you. There's this new creativity, this spark is happening. So whenever you feel really, really lost, like I always love to say to all the Sphinxes is like, just know they're just around the corner. That spark, like the spark of life, the thing that just like creates something completely new, a new direction, a pivot, something else, it's so close. So that feeling of lost and that depth of inertia is a sign that something great is just about to happen. Does that resonate with you?
Fuck yeah.
I love it.
It's so funny because I've literally designed my own program that I called The Forbidden Journey. And it is about helping people basically who feel lost in a sense of their direction, the purpose, like where they're going in life, or like they kind of know, but there's like some invisible barrier that they just can't seem to break through, you know? And yeah. So like, that's what I kind of designed my whole coaching program around. And it's just because that's what I like, I face that very much in my life, which I had to move through, shift through, and understand.
Yeah. And it's your superpower, you know, like I watch my youngest son. So he's a Sphinx as well. And I will often joke, he's like the freaking Pied Piper. Like when he listens to the kids around him and what they need, what they want, and where they want to be led, when he listens, they will follow him off a cliff. Like he's the Pied Piper. They will go wherever he wants them to go. So, you know, when you're a Sphinx, you've got to be really conscious, like, wow, I have a lot of authority here. And the most important thing for you to understand is that you have to listen to your people. What do they need? Where did they want you to lead them? Because they're going to tell you, and then they're going to put all their faith in you to take them there.
So interesting. Wow. Wow. And so, okay. So thank you for that. That's really helpful for me to know, especially kind of where I'm at right now in my journey. Just kind of literally going through a little bit of that inertia, you know, but also knowing there's something that's so close to being there on the other side. So without really even knowing exactly what it is, what I'm curious to know. So I asked some people in my audience, people who are in one of my programs, my membership programs, Alchemy, because there's some people in there that are really into human design. And I was like, what do you guys want to know about like this topic? And one of the questions that came up was around this major shift that's projected to happen in 2027 when I guess it was Pluto. What is the deal with Pluto and Uranus and its involvement? Like, so what is that prophecy and how do you perceive all that?
Yeah. Okay, cool. I love this question. So in human design, the language that we call this is what we call a new paradigm. So in 2027, we enter into this new paradigm. At the moment, we're in this era. It's been the last 400 years where we've been governed. So each era that we live in is governed by an incarnation cross of its own. So we've all been living under this incarnation cross of planning. So what does that mean? Well, it means that we've created things like the industrial age. We have moved mankind forward so fast. This cross of planning is all about mastering skills, focusing on dreams, making them come true. It's all about community. It's about tribe. It's about men and women, husband and wife, like the contracts that bind people together, and this evolution. Now, what we're seeing is that this energy of the cross of planning is starting to fall apart because we're moving into this new era in 2027 and we're moving to the time of the sleeping phoenix. So at the moment in the cross of planning, we have a lot of collective and tribal energy. These are really governing energies that are coming to an end. And I really believe it's so much why, as we're going towards 2027, we're moving into this very individualistic time. And we've got some incredible themes that are being completely rewritten right now that are almost taboo or unspoken about in the old era. And that is like sex and money. Because at the end, like in the era that we're in right now, it's all about husband, wife, man, woman, let's be honest, patriarchy, you know, control, all of those things. And it's sold to us and it's been that way because it's for the betterment of man. You know, we're doing it for the other. We sacrifice so everyone is taken care of. And we're moving into this time, which is all about individuality in this new time that like, well, when my cup is full, when I'm being authentically me, I can create miracles. You know, the world can be completely rewritten. So as we move into the new paradigm, we have two gates, the gate of abundance. We have four gates in total, but two that are going to be big players that we're already seeing play out is the gate of abundance and the gate of intimacy. So money and sex. We're starting to see that, you know, old white guys aren't the only ones that get to have access to money. Yeah. And we're really starting to understand that we all have the same capacity to access wealth and money than anyone else on the planet. Now, I know that sounds like a really uneducated, arrogant thing to say, But ultimately, in a quantum reality, we do. The only thing stopping us is knowing that we do or don't have the access to these things, because we all can have access to it no matter where we are. Even though so many people are just living out such awful realities right now that feels so distant from that. We're moving to a time where we're going to have so many more resources. And it's not just money, it's food, it's education, it's time. We're going to have so much more time on our hands. So we're redefining money and how to earn money and what wealth means. And we're understanding that the most important thing we have is our time, is our the moments that we have in this body, in this life. And we're also redefining sexuality. Like, what we're seeing is that old paradigm of man, woman crumbling everywhere, because we're moving into this time where we're rewriting intimacy. What does intimacy even mean from person to person? And although there's all these different opinions and all these different iterations and all these different everything, we're actually moving to a time where we will probably, and not our generation necessarily, but in this next era, it's going to be so much more about, well, my heart was drawn to your heart, because that's the redefining of intimacy that we're moving into, that it's my love of this other being that creates intimacy. It's not everything else that goes with it from the old way. As we move into the new paradigm as well, we start to understand that our individual transformation is primary, that the power lies within us. So again, we're seeing all of these things battle out on planet Earth right now, because the honest truth is if each and every one of us actually realized how powerful we are, just as we are, then a lot of the powers that be would be screwed. And that is a lot of what's going on in the world right now, where they're vying for our attention, because that's the most powerful thing we have, our focus. Mm-hmm. Because what we focus on grows. Mm-hmm. That's what we language. That's what we feel. That's, you know, that's where our energy goes. So our focus, our attention is everything. So as we move to this new paradigm, we're just going to have the potential to completely rewrite this planet Earth, the world that we're living in right now. And it does mean that we need to be focused on the potential. You know, we need to be focused on our own self-empowerment, because there's this big energy of self-empowerment in this new paradigm that we're going into. So what does that mean? Well, self-empowerment means loving, trusting, and accepting yourself. Self-empowerment means having the courage to be authentically you. Self-empowerment means no longer letting other people or groups or authorities separate us. We have to stop that crap. We have to stop thinking that we are separate from the other. And as we move into this, which is so, it's counterintuitive. We're moving into this really individualistic time. So people think, well, maybe then everyone, if everyone's thinking for themselves, then they won't care about anyone. And it's actually the opposite. Because as within, so without. So when we learn to love, trust, and accept ourselves, to honor ourselves, to take care of ourselves, to, you know, champion ourselves, then we can't help but do that for everyone else. So we create this very different dynamic, very different planet. Now, one of the things that, and it's been talked about recently, I'm not exactly sure what episode or which podcast, but there was a podcast out in the last, I'm going to say 4 to 5 months, where someone has talked a lot about the prophecy of the new paradigm that Ra Uruhu put out there. And it's something for me that I think is really freaking irresponsible. As a behavioralist, I think that putting a prophecy out there like that, and it's very scary and doom and gloom, and basically everyone's going to kill each other and all of those things, it's a really, really unresourceful and irresponsible thing to do, because nothing is set in stone. Nothing at all is set in stone. We are going to have these energies, and we're going to choose to do what we will with these energies. What people say when they're sharing this prophecy of Ra, what they don't point out is that even though Ra had the ability, or had these few days where he channeled this information, this profound high consciousness information, he, in fact, was not a high consciousness human himself. He operated from his shadow most of the time. His primary energy was shock. So he actually was on the planet to birth human design in the best way he knew how, and that was to be shocking. That was to scare the crap out of people so they'd pay attention to it. And it worked. You know, like right now we're in this time where human design is just expanding rapidly. So he was exactly the right person at the right time to break through. But are his prophecies true? No. I mean, at the end of the day, it's one man and it's one man's perception of reality. These aren't things that the voice said. These are his perceptions of what he shared with the world. And I think one of the things that's so important that we understand is the power always lies within each individual. So if we let ourselves get scared and caught up in these stories, then we will perpetuate that. But if we don't, if we choose to say, okay, cool, well, Emma's just told me that it's the gate 34, the gate 20, the gate 55, the gate 59. And these four energies are about wisdom and presence, about self-empowerment, about intimacy, and about abundance and an abundant spirit. So if I lean into the potentials of those, then it can be a completely different reality. Then that is what we need to be talking about, not the prophecy of someone who was operating from his ego most of the time. Even though he was brilliant, he was absolutely brilliant and his work was great, he's not someone that you should invest a lot of energy in, like he was right about what's going to happen on planet Earth.
Powerful. Really love that you shared all that information in that way, because I'm in total alignment with you in that idea that these prophecies that everyone are listening to, it doesn't matter where it's coming from or what it's about, if we are indeed moving into an individualization, era where it's all about who we are and tapping into our own personal power, then following such things is only going to delay or make it more troublesome for you to get into that era in your own manner. And this is something that people are really struggling with in some ways, and some people aren't, they're really getting it. But your ability to shape your reality is so dependent on where you're putting your energy and focus into. Like you were saying, our focus is so important. And if you're too busy focusing on other people's narratives of what the future is going to be, you're not putting energy into the narrative of what you want to create for your future. And this is something that if you're in a higher level of consciousness and you're really dedicated to mastering yourself and mastering your destiny, you have to get away from that shit. You just have to.
Like 100%.
It's no good for you. And it's something that I think we all get caught up in. I know I got caught up in over the years of my own development. You know, I'd be like, ooh, what's this? You know, it's very clickbaity. It's very like, again, it's the shock. It's the awe. It's like, ooh. And it's also this idea of like, well, I want to be in the know just in case it does happen. Then I want to be able to say, oh, I knew about that. And, you know, what you don't realize is that you're part of creating something that maybe you don't even want to create.
Yeah. And this is, I love everything that you just said. And it's so really important, you know, like, because in so many ways, from a behavioral point of view, we're just engaging because we want connection. We are a global community starved of connection and unresourceful connection. And connection is one of the six core human needs. And unresourceful connection looks like drama, looks like gossip, looks like all of these things. And, you know, and people know that. Advertisers know that. TV stations know that. You know, the media knows that. So that's why they do it, because if they can get you united around the next evil whatever, then they can send you in the direction that they want you to go in. And at the end of the day, we can be compassionate and loving and we can give our support. But we can also do that from a place of positivity, of potential. You know, it always makes me think of Mother Teresa. You know, Mother Teresa was so famous for saying that she would never go to an anti-war rally, but the moment you invite her to a peace rally, she'll be there, you know, because she knew it. She was all over what she needed to focus on. And one of the things that I learned at the beginning of this year, we had an online retreat all about purpose and abundance in HDX. And one of our speakers was from this brilliant business called the FLFE. And they were talking all about the consciousness, scale of consciousness, the Dr. David Hawkins scale of consciousness. And if you haven't read Power versus Force, you should bloody read it. It's the best book.
Yes.
And they were talking that, you know, once we get, you know, most of the human race sits just below 200 on this scale. Now, they were saying that there's actually more and more healers and coaches that are starting to hit the 500 mark. And in this particular thing that we were doing, they're like, I'm above 500 in my consciousness. Now, the reason why I bring that up is because the moment we hit 500, we doing nothing, just our being, we influence 600,000 people. 600,000 people are positively affected by my consciousness, and I don't have to do anything. I just need to be me every day, live with joy and love and compassion, do all the things that light me up, and not from an egotistical way, from a heart-led way, from a place of alignment. That's not like I'm all unicorns and rainbows. Like, this year's been one of the most incredibly successful years for me and really traumatic because I've had some really big challenges in my life. However, because of the way I choose to focus my attention, I heal my trauma. I feel the things that need to be felt. And then I choose to see the potential from each and every moment. So when we actually stay in this place, when we stay in the driver's seat, when we don't let the default of the negativity bias in our brain and all of our conditioning from out there tell us, poor us, we should feel like this, like my mother died not long ago. I should grieve this way. And I'm like, screw that. I'm not going to grieve in any way that anyone else tells me to grieve. I'm going to grieve in the way that I'm going to grieve. And if we can start to see that, like for me, it was so much more about she was ready to go. So who am I to hold on to her? You know, it was so much more about sharing all these stories with my kids about Gran and all the amazing things that she did, even though she was a bit crazy and awful in the last few years. Like, that's the way that I was, you know, felt so good about grieving. And just recently, a couple of weeks ago, I was like smacked in the face with the grief of losing my mother, just out of the blue. But at no point do I go into victimhood. At no point do I let myself play out grief the way I think I should play it out. And I think too many of us don't actually realize that we're playing out all these things unconsciously in the way we think we should, as opposed to actually listening to our heart and our soul and saying, well, really, what do we feel? Mm-hmm. Really, what does grief or whatever it is look like for us? Sorry, I went on a bit of a rant.
No, it's again, I feel like I'm talking to another version of myself in so many ways because we have so many similarities. I literally just lost a close friend like a month ago. Okay, he passed away suddenly, heart attack. And the very next day after I found out, I was like, I want to say goodbye in my way. And I want to grieve this in my way. And my way was making myself a ceremonial cacao at like 5 a.m. in the morning and then driving up to the cliffs and sitting on top of, you know, a bluff, watching the sunrise and saying goodbye to him while lighting a candle beside me and just, you know, letting the light start to pour in as opposed to maybe the light going away. I was like, I want, you know, to be here with him in this way and I'm gonna just celebrate his life in this way. And this is like, it's something I've never resonated with funerals, like in how they're held. And so I somehow have been able to avoid a lot of funerals, not necessarily because I've just like, no, I'm not going to go to that. I'm literally like out of the country when it happens. I'm so far away that it's like, it's almost ridiculous to come home for it. So what do? I have my own ceremony, my own way where I say goodbye. And so I'm so happy that you said that because I think it's so important for us to learn how to deal with these things in our own personal way that feels right for us. And grief is such a hard one because you feel like you've got to do it the way everyone else is doing it, but is it really working for you? Like that would never work for me to go to the funeral, to dress in black, to do all that kind of stuff, you know, and just like, I don't know, but
okay. I think it's so important what you're saying. I just want to quickly add to that because I actually lost my dad a few years ago as well. And it was really similar, you know, and I've actually not been as close to my mum and dad in the last decade as I am now, you know, since they died, since they passed over. Like my mother, when she did pass away, she turned up in almost every second human I saw. Like, I was like, wow, that's like my mother. Wow, my mom used to do that. Wow. Like, and we have to stop falling into these, you know, rules, these unconditional rules, whatever they are. And I know for me, with both my parents, my first initial response, reaction, when I heard, because I missed it with both of them, I was not there. And I remember, especially with my mom, I'm like, someone has to be with her. You know, like I was distraught at the thought that she would be alone. And we all thought she was fine, and then she just slipped off on her own. And the thing with both my parents was this moment of, I felt their relief. I felt their relief of being let, you know, go of that body, because they were ready. And I wouldn't, you know, when my dad died, I didn't tell anyone but my close people that that's the way I felt, that I actually felt really, I felt lighter. I felt really happy for them, all of these things, because that's not what you think when, you know, you've just lost your parents. But by the time I lost mom, I was like, yeah, like I feel that. Like, it's so important that I lent into her experience, and I could feel her letting go, and I could feel her actually going through this healing process once she left her physical body. So again, this goes back to what you said in the beginning. This is the difference of life when we live from our body, when mm-hmm. we live from subtle energy, when we feel our way through life instead of overthinking it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so important. It's so important. And I want to also touch on some other things that you brought up when you were talking about this 2027 shift, and how like our idea of like, say, money and intimacy. So money, sex is kind of changing. And this is, it's so interesting to hear you saying all this, knowing like what's been moving through me and what I'm like being called to create and like deliver. It's just really this, and again, because like when you said, I've got the cross of the Sphinx, I have a lot of Egyptian downloads coming through, like ancient Egyptian stuff of remembrance and bringing forth that stuff. And a lot of it is around the sacred sexual energies, literally, in how to manifest and create your reality. So how do you use your sexual energy to create what it is that you want? Not just to maybe make a child, you know, in the traditional way,
exactly.
Like, you know, what it is, but to really kind of connect and allow that energy to move through you so that you can attract more abundance, because the abundance codes, where are they? They rest in your sacral chakra in that area, right? It's the place of womb that can grow and grow and grow, and the belly of birthing what it is that you want to create here. And so really what I've noticed is this shift in, at least, okay, for myself, in really allowing this sexual energy to move through my body in a brand new way. So creating a whole new relationship to what it means to have this sexual energy moving through me, and then incorporating it into dance and to physical movement in general. And then also like clearing out all of the shame and the guilt that is like suppressing that, right? And so removing all of that came in with a lot of these traditional systems that we've been working through in that era that you were just speaking about, that we're now leaving, and really embracing our own individual uniqueness of what it means to be in that creative flow of that sexual energy, to be in pleasure, to like really be lit up in that way, I think is so important. And I'm really excited that this is kind of the era of where we're moving into, because I'm like, okay, cool. Now I can understand. I see it. I already see it happening, you know, and I already see so many people like talking about it more and teaching people, which I think is beautiful, and really kind of shifting our relationship with that. And it's so important to work on healing these areas so that you can embrace and master this new era that we're all moving into.
You know what? Like, everything you just said is so beautiful and profound. And it makes me realize, you know, I'm reading a book at the moment that written by an Australian author, Clementine Ford. And it's just going back over how, you know, that sacral energy of ours, it's been so shut down in women. You know, we have been so conditioned to think that the only thing of any value that we have within us is our ability to make babies. And ultimately, that ability that we have to make babies is the most profound thing on planet Earth, mm-hmm. you know, and women haven't been allowed to fully access that. And one of the things that's really cool about human design and, you know, all the sacral beings, so 70% of the global population, and this isn't to say that the non-sacral beings don't get to experience it. In fact, they get to experience an amplified version of it. But at the end of the day, like, a sacral being is always guided by whether they're turned on by something or not. You know, and in the past, we're like, oh, you can't say that. Oh my God. Like, I can't be turned on by this new data software that I've just, you know, got. Like, yeah, you can, babe. Like, that's all the things that we've never been allowed to access. You know, we think about Think and Grow Rich, you know, they talk, he talks about, Napoleon Hill talks about transmutation of that sexual energy in men, you know, instead of having sex, use that energy to put into your ideas and your creativity. And I feel like with women, it's so much bigger than that, because at the end of the day, we don't even need the sex. Like, we can if we want to, but we don't even need that to transmute. We've got it all going on inside of us. It's there all the time. It's just that we've always been told that it's wrong and it's shameful and we need to shut it down. And ultimately, I say bullshit. Actually, this is a time that we need to connect so deeply into this life force energy and to really understand what does it feel like to be turned on by life? Because we're birthing new things in every moment. And I think so many of us don't even understand what the capacity that we have within us to do that. So yeah, let life turn you on. Like that's a good thing.
I love that so much. I'm going to be using that now, like everything, because it's like, I'm glad you said it that way, because it's kind of how I've been operating without really realizing it in that way. Because in my journeys where I've experienced all this like massive Kundalini activation and all of this active sexual energy flowing through me, and just this literally like turned on by the blueberry in my mouth, or turned on, you know, by like the, even just like the, maybe the touch of my own hair, you know, like whatever it might be. And I'm just like, I remember feeling like, I'm so in love with life. I'm so in love with this cracker and truffle butter on it right now. Like, I just want to make love to my reality. And so it's so cool, because it's like, yes, now I'm going to be like, does this turn me on or does this turn me off? And that's, I think, going to be like a guiding light for me, like a little guiding compass for me going forward. Like, is this really getting me wet or is this not?
Exactly,
like, is this drying
right?
me out like the Sahara? Because then if it's drying me out, like, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. And that's it. You know, at the end of the day, this is the capacity that we have within us. And you know what's really cool about your chart specifically? In your personality earth, which is kind of like, it's the energy that drives the work that you do in the world. And the work that you do in the world is all about, I'm going to go the other way around. So the work that you're here to do actually falls in the gate two, and the gate two is the divine feminine. Oh. So you're actually here to, like, your work is all about being in that embodiment of the divine feminine. And what drives that turbine piece for you is the divine masculine. So within you, there's this balance of like the divine masculine is the thing that is like, well, when I'm allowing that spark of creativity, when I'm leaning into that, that ability to use my unique voice or whatever it might be, then all of a sudden I can just embody my feminine and I can take that out in the world and I can support other women with that. I can call in all the resources I need, and really take that magic out into the world. So a lot of what you're here to do is all about that, is all about making sure as a sacral being that you're turned on by the things that you're doing, because you're giving everyone else permission. And a large part of the work that you're here to do on planet Earth is all about the divine feminine and the divine masculine, actually.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, my audience knows this. It's like, I was so out of my feminine energy for the first 30 years of my life, right? First 31 years. And it wasn't until I hit 31 that I was like, oh, maybe it's time to start embracing this and start shifting my relationship with this. And of course, so like you said, like I experienced what it was like to be so disconnected and then reconnect and then see the power and then share it and speak about it, teach it, like all that kind of stuff. So this has been a wild journey and a conversation. I've loved every second of this, Emma.
Yeah, me too. Oh my goodness. I could talk to you all day. I love this so much.
I know. And I can't wait to come on your podcast and like, we'll probably just continue the conversation in other ways. And so for all of you who are listening, you got to check out Emma's podcast, and it's the number one in human design. What else have you got going on that you can share with my audience? So if they're interested in contacting you, checking out more of your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find everything that you need on my website, which is emmadunwoody.com. You can get your free chart there. You can go over to the podcast, which is the Human Design Podcast, and I'll help you unpack every part of your chart. It's all there. But if you're ready to dive deeper, the place to be is our HDX, which is my membership community. It's the best, like we say, the best human design community on the planet, but it's even more than that. Like next year, we've got all these incredible teachers. Oh my God. All these incredible teachers that are going to be guiding as well. So not just human design, we've got wealth, we've got marketing, we've got the gene keys, we've got spirituality and all of the intuition, all your, you know, your intuition and how to use it. So it's so much more than that. And that's really the best place to find me. And also come over to Instagram. I'm the Human Design Coach over there on Instagram, and just, yeah, send me a message, say hi.
I love that so much. What a fantastic conversation. Totally wasn't expecting it to go the direction that it did because I didn't know that much about human design, but I love your approach. I love the wisdom that you shared today. And I also am a huge fan. Obviously, my audience is going to know this, of how you broke down the prophecy, the 2027 prophecy, and then also talked about the pitfalls of it as well, because this is something where people have to really learn how to take their power back and not give it away. And these prophecies are literally honeypots for giving your power away, and you've got to stop doing it. It doesn't mean that you can't listen and take in some of the information, but if you're so tied into needing someone to tell you that there's going to be a change coming without you actually being part of the change already and being willing to shift it in the vision that you have, then you're in a place of disempowerment going in.
Yeah. I mean, amen, sister. That is so incredibly important. And people need to believe that, they need to understand that the power that lies within them. Like, let's stop giving our power away to other people and even to the universe. You know, I always joke, like, there were so many years that I quit needing external validation. I was like, oh, I don't need external validation. Look at me. I'm so awesome. Universe, can you just give me a sign? Can you just give me another sign? Can you give me another sign? Like, I didn't even know that I was giving my power away to the universe. Like, really, stop it. Stop giving your power away and invest in the future you want to be a part of co-creating, like a loving, supportive, incredible world. And together we can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Emma, for coming on the show. And to everyone here, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, make sure you share it with all your family and friends. This is a big, powerful one. And if you're interested in getting your free human design chart, the link is in the description below. Or if you're listening to this on podcast apps, it is in the show notes. And don't forget, guys, that the 2024 Forbidden Journey Retreat here in Breckenridge, Colorado is less than 6 months away. I'd love to see you there. It's going to be a transformational retreat. And so if you'd like to secure your ticket, link is in the description for you to do that. I'd love to see you there. And don't forget, I also have that new session called Future Insight Sessions. Okay. Where we're going to have a conversation with your future self about your destiny. So who better than to get advice from the future you? Find out what you need to start doing now and what you need to stop doing now. All of that is in the description below. I love you guys so much. Have an incredible week, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks again for joining me for another show on the Enlighten Up podcast. I love you guys so much for all of your continued support. So remember to raise your vibe, find your tribe, and be open to the infinite possibilities held in the mysteries that surround us all. Thanks again for sharing the show with your family and friends. And if you're new to the show and you need to find out more information about me, please head on over to my website, NicoleFrolick.com, where you can join my newsletter. And please follow me on Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube. Keep your light bright, and I'll see you next week.